Hi, this is Tim Schmidt with Florida Georgia Radio. You're listening live as we're leading up to game time on Saturday at 3:30 p.m. We are actually live from the Jacksonville.com Florida Times Union newsroom, which is right in the heart of downtown Jacksonville on what has turned out to be a great day. Chilly, but nice. And I'm joined by longtime sports reporter for the Florida Times Union, Gary Smits. How you doing, Gary?
Doing pretty good.
Yeah, this is fun. So I've never done this before. This is one of the most fun weeks around here, isn't it?
Yeah, it's. I would say that, you know, it's there are certain things in a certain city, area, county that are kind of signify the mm-hmm. seasons.
Sure.
Signify the season. And
the people, Masters, which is one,
Masters,
which you and I have,
which is a rite of spring.
Right?
It's been used frequently to that.
Sure.
The Players' Championship now is back in March. I know a lot of people in Jacksonville area are saying that they're glad it's back in March because to them that was a signal that the spring was here.
Mm-hmm.
In May, not so much. But the Florida-Georgia to people is always a trigger because they know that after Florida-Georgia, Thanksgiving, Christmas is right on the cusp.
Sure.
Time to start thinking about Christmas shopping, getting your decorations out. And they actually enjoy it for that reason. And a lot of times it's coincided with the first cool snap of the season, mm-hmm. which is what we're going through right now. We set a record for the high temperature on a Halloween yesterday.
Crazy.
It got into the upper 80s and 91 out at the airport and everything, and then today it's not going to get above 65 or
yeah.
so. Same thing for tomorrow, so perfect football weather.
Although I was just going to say, it feels like football weather, and
yeah.
that's a good thing. Now, how many of these have you covered? How long have you been around here?
Well, I've been with the publishing company that's owned the Times Union, either Morris Communications or Gatehouse, since 1981.
Mm-hmm.
Different duties, things like that. I covered four Florida-Georgia games in the 80s when I was at the St. Augustine Record.
Mm-hmm.
And then
another of our fine newspapers.
Yeah, exactly. And when I came back, I had different duties, golf, Jaguars, Florida State. Mm-hmm. I was over there. So I missed out on Florida-Georgia until maybe in the 2004-2005 range, and now I've probably covered the last 15 or 16 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd forgotten how much fun it could be. It has the atmosphere of a big-time bowl week.
Sure.
In this town. Not so much for the players, because according to NCAA rules, they can't come to a neutral site or an away site more than 48 hours in advance.
Right.
So they don't get the atmosphere and the feel and everything, but in Jacksonville, you know, for example, the RV City across the stadium opens up on Tuesday morning at 8 o'clock, and it's something that even other neutral site games don't really have, to the best of my knowledge. And as you reserve a spot in Metropolitan Park across the street from the stadium, you bring your RV in there, and you're set for the week. And if you're fortunate enough to own an RV, you know, then you don't have to worry about a hotel room, and you know, you bring your own food, and every night's a party over there. They have an RV decorating contest in the Florida and Georgia motif.
Wow.
People have been known to get married in the middle of RV City.
Wow.
I'm sure some marriages have been launched. Maybe some divorces have been the seeds for that have been planted. And then the tailgating aspect of it is unlike any other game that I'm aware of,
right.
which hence the nickname that the city of Jacksonville kind of sort of would like us to stop using.
Get away from,
the
sure.
world's largest outdoor cocktail party,
yeah.
which was coined in the 1970s by a Florida Times Union sports editor named Bill Castells.
Ah.
So we have that going for us.
That's right. I didn't know that.
Yep. And but there are estimates by the police department that the crowd will be in the 83,000, 84,000 range, but there are estimates that are another 20,000 to 40,000 people who are in the parking lot, private parking lots around the stadium, tailgating, that don't even come into the game.
Wow.
There are people that will just buy a private parking spot, bring their car, bring their RV, bring their truck and everything, a generator, a TV, the grill, and they come just for the day and they watch the game.
That's
on TV
wild.
Out in their in their parking spot.
So fun. And it really is such a great setting. It's right by the river. It's not downtown per se, but, you know, within walking distance,
mm-hmm.
just a 15-minute walk
Many
or so.
Many people do that, yeah.
And I'm sure they do. Now, before we get to the actual history of the game, you brought up RV Park, and I think that is kind of a unique thing. Do you think as, and we talked a little about this with Mark Woods, but as the landing here, and I'm asking for folks who are coming into town, let's say I'm from Athens, and I haven't been here in, you know, 2 years, and I'm expecting I'm going to pop off at the landing here like I always have, and that's where we're going to, all the fun will be. Instead, is RV Park really become the epicenter? There, I mean, that's...
Well, it's the epicenter if you have an RV, but the city has made arrangements. And I think it's a very good situation because the landing is, as you just pointed out, is a, you know, maybe a mile and a half walk from the stadium, and they're having what they call the Bold City Bash, which they have blocked off a certain portion of the area in the A. Philip Randolph Adams Street. For those familiar, a better way to put it will be it's at the intersection where the baseball stadium is,
right,
where the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp Double A franchise for the Florida Marlins play. And which is right across shared parking lot with the football stadium. So starting maybe about now, actually about 1 o'clock, there's going to be a fan fest in the indoor practice facility that the Jaguars have. That at 1 o'clock, at 4 o'clock, the block party or the Bold City Bash starts, and there's going to be food trucks and vendors, and there are about three or four. Bars and restaurants in the area that I'm sure are going to be taking advantage of this. There's going to be at 6:30, there's going to be an exhibition baseball game between the University of Florida and the University of Georgia. So there's baseball out there. After that's over, a country music concert with a couple of up-and-coming singers who are so up-and-coming, the names are escaping me right now. But I'm assured by some of our younger country music fans around the office that
this
people
is a big
know
deal.
Who they are, yeah.
All right.
And then there's going to be a fireworks display, but there's going to be things going around in that block area. And I think it's a better place to congregate than the landing because it is much closer to the stadium area.
That's good, and that's an interesting thing that they're starting to add those bits and pieces. Obviously, they're being a little more mindful. You don't want folks necessarily walking a mile and a half before a big football game. But anyway, let's get to the game itself. You know, as I said, I've never been here for this week. I have actually been to both other sites, but never here for this game. Tell me a little about the history. I mean, you've probably dug into this throughout the years. This thing's been played here every year, or there has
been? Since 1933.
Okay.
Right. Now, they rotated this game quite a bit in the early years. It's been played at Macon, Georgia. It's been played in Tampa. It's been played in Savannah, just to give you an example.
Interesting.
It was played on the campuses sometimes, and they... oddly enough, the one place they've missed, they've never played it in Atlanta. Huh. I'm not quite sure how they missed that. But starting in 1933, they decided to take it to Jacksonville on an annual basis. The only exceptions to that have been in 94 and 95. When Jacksonville got the Jaguars as an NFL franchise, the caveat was they had to completely pretty much tear down the stadium and build it back up mm-hmm. again, which is a two-year process. So those 2 years, the game went to the campuses. Florida has Steve Spurrier. He has some of his best teams in. They won both games. Coach Spurrier made a big deal about scoring 50 points between the hedges, which had never been done by an opponent.
Yeah.
He may have run some things and left some players in to assure that, knowing that he would never have to go back to Athens again.
Sure.
They made it pretty easy for that. But anyway, ever since then, it's been in Jacksonville every year. It's a neutral site game. There are two other examples of fairly big college rivalries and neutral sites. Everybody has Oklahoma and Texas mm-hmm. has played in Dallas. And Army-Navy, for the most part, has played in Philadelphia. But they have rotated that game to other sites, such as Baltimore, New York, Washington, in the past. So Oklahoma, Texas, and Florida, Georgia are the only two that have truly stayed in the same site for an extended period of time. The neutrality of it depends on who's on top and who's on bottom of the sure. series. This has been a very streaky series. This does not go Florida wins 1 year, Georgia wins the next, Florida, Georgia, Florida, Georgia. This is right now, Georgia's won the last two, and they've won 5 out of 8. Everybody knows famously the Seasburger won 10 out of 11, I believe. Mm-hmm. Okay, before that, Vince Dooley owned the series. There was one stretch where he won 10 out of 12. So it's always been very, very streaky. And once one team wins a couple in a row, they kind of tend to seize control of it. and the team that's kind of on the down end of that always starts making noise about, well, maybe we should take this to the campuses. Right, maybe sure. we should take this to Atlanta, to be fair, and rotate it.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that if it ever does move from Jacksonville, there's a better chance of it going to the campuses than it is to Atlanta.
Another neutral site.
Than it is to Atlanta, because, first of all, Atlanta, even the new stadium, has 73,000 capacity. There's not much difference between that and the old Georgia Dome. There is no room to add the 8,000 seats or so that would bring it to the capacity it is now. And Florida and Georgia Boosters are not going to give up 4,000 or 5,000 tickets
right.
each.
Good luck with that.
They're just not going to do that.
Right.
The schools are not going to give up the revenue. The boosters are not going to want to give up tickets. So you can, and there is nowhere near the tailgating space around the Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta that there is here. Which, and if anybody doesn't think that's an important aspect of this game, then they're nuts. I can promise you one thing: wherever this game is played in the future, it will never be in Atlanta. It's just not going to happen. All you Georgia people, sorry, that want this in Atlanta, you got a better chance of being in Athens.
Right.
The realistic possibility is go Athens, Gainesville, Jacksonville, Athens, Gainesville, Jacksonville.
Now,
at some point,
do you think that would enhance the rivalry or would it take away? Because what makes this special, I think, is that people can kind of count on it, right? I mean,
yeah.
Again, going back to the Oklahoma, Texas, that's something that folks who are from each side will, you know, kind of harass each other and say, "Yeah, we'll see you at the state fair. We'll get you next year at the state fair." Mm-hmm. That's the same feeling with this. It makes it special.
Yeah, Florida fans are never going to argue about this game being in Jacksonville.
Right.
That's not the issue was always from the Georgia end.
Sure.
And they kind of claim, well, it's technically in the state of Florida. Of course, the joke around the rest of the state of Florida is that Jacksonville always been South Georgia anyway. and many, many, many big-time Georgia boosters either have retirement homes or summer homes in the Sea Island, Jekyll Island area, which is only about an hour north of here.
Sure.
And those areas, by the way, benefit greatly from the economic impact of this game.
Mm-hmm.
As we speak right now, they're having one heck of a, they call it the beach party in St. Simon's Island.
Nice. What am I doing here? I
exactly
should be up there.
What are we doing here? Because there's a heck of a party going on in St. Simon's Island.
Right.
And I think that there are Georgia fans with enough boosters with enough influence who enjoy that little vacation trip in St. Simon's and Jekyll Island that,
sure.
That's not going to mess with
it. It lines up.
Yeah, and they signed a contract, or not? They didn't sign a contract yet. There's an agreement of understanding. It's got to be approved by the Jacksonville City Council, but they announced the new terms last week. It's here for another 4 years with an option for two more. All right, and the city of Jacksonville, just to show you how serious they are about this, the two teams split the ticket revenue, which is about $3.5 million each.
Mm-hmm.
But the city had paid them $250,000 each to come here. That's getting bumped to $1 million each starting next year for the next 2 years. And then in the last 2 years of the contract, it's going to be $1.25 million. So Jacksonville, hearing some comments, especially from Georgia coach Kirby Smart, who claims that having this game puts him at a recruiting disadvantage,
right,
which is ridiculous because Kirby is not having trouble.
I was just going to say, he's doing pretty well.
He claims that he
a lot of five-star recruits going up to Athens.
He claims that he gets six home games to entertain recruits. Alabama and LSU get seven.
Yeah.
And he's in Auburn, and he's at a disadvantage from those teams. And forgetting for the moment that his main recruiting rival in the East is Florida, and Florida's only getting six games.
Sure.
And I would tell Kirby Smart that if you've got, first of all, if you're recruiting any kid in Florida, he's going to want to play in this game for either side.
Okay? Absolutely.
Plus, if you're recruiting any kid in Georgia, just tell the kid to turn on the TV, look at that atmosphere, or maybe come down here one time and tell me that any kid wouldn't want to play
in that
game.
There probably is something to the fact that making us think about this rewards the programs. I mean, I'm sure when Kirby Smart said that, he knew that Jacksonville wasn't just going to sit on its hands, that they were going to say, well, what can we do to help, right? I mean, or at least
are you trying to tell me a football coach would take advantage of a situation like that?
No chance. Real quick, Gary Smith's a sports columnist from the Florida Times Union sitting with us, and we so appreciate it because he's usually not here in the office on Friday, so we do appreciate it. But now I want to get to your best game that you've seen. And when you think back to some of the games that have been here under your watch, or I mean overall, but think about some of the games that stand out in your memory that you've covered or been at.
Well, that's one of those things where it's difficult. There have been a lot of great ones. I would say that in 2010, the first and to date the only overtime game in the history of this, Florida won 34-31. And that was a great back and forth game. The last two have been a little bit one sided in Georgia's favor. And before that, Florida had a 3-game winning streak in the series, and those weren't really 38-20, 27-3, 24-10.
Yeah.
The highlight of the 38-20 game was Florida's first touchdown was by a walk-on named Michael McNeely, who is a walk-on defensive back, and they put him in as a holder on a field goal attempt. Georgia didn't spot it. They snapped the ball to him, and he picked it up and ran in the corner of the end zone for a touchdown. Michael McNeely was a senior. He was a med school student at Florida, and he was working at a Gainesville Publix part-time.
Which, by the way, great plug. This radio station is being brought to you by Publix.
Yes.
So well done, Gary Smith.
You know what? Great.
Pitchman.
Sometimes we fall into great situations here. Well, he reported to work the next day, 9 o'clock in the morning, the next day at the Publix in Gainesville. By that time, word had spread and everything, and all his coworkers and the customers were waiting for him to get there. They had like a cake for him. They broke into applause. The media was there. Michael McNeely was a conquering hero coming back to Publix, put the apron on, and started bagging.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Got right back to work.
So that was one of the great moments of that. There have been quite a few recently. Quite a few with the streaky side of the series in the fact that one team will run off 5 out of 6, mm-hmm. 3 or 4 in a row, things like that. There haven't been all that many close games. There was a stretch from 2010 to 2013 where we had some close scores, but the overtime game obviously sticks out. The Georgia stomp, the one that's the 2007 game where Georgia had not won in a while, and Mark Richt, the coach at the time, wanted them to do something emotional if they scored first, and the players decided that the whole team would meet in the end zone after the touchdown, which was drew a whole lot of flags.
Yeah,
and
that happens,
and that was wound up being 42-30, so that was pretty doggone entertaining. There have been the one thing I remember people tell me I wasn't at, the one game was the 11-10 game. Florida beat Georgia 11-10 mm-hmm. in 73, where they scored late touchdown and went for two, disdained the tie. And Florida had a quarterback named Don Gaffney, and they're running the wishbone.
Think about that.
Yeah, running the wishbone and threw the winning touchdown pass to a guy named Hank Foldberg.
Did he go back to work at Publix the next day?
No. I don't think either one of them were working at Publix at that point. We had big stars back then here, so maybe they went to work at the big star.
There you go.
But then the win, place, and show gold standard of all Florida Georgia games still remains the Lindsey Scott game in 1980.
Hmm.
Florida had a 21-19 lead, and Georgia was backed up on its own 7-yard line, no timeouts left, inside of a minute. And Buck Ballew throws this little inside slip screen, whatever, to Lindsey Scott, mm-hmm. and just a perfect storm. A couple of guys slipped, a couple of guys got blocked 93 yards later. And as Larry Munson's call, the famous call, Lindsey Scott, Lindsey Scott, Lindsey Scott.
Mm-hmm.
And Georgia wins that game 26-21. That's when Larry Munson, the longtime Georgia radio broadcaster, said there's going to be some damage in Sea Island tonight.
Gary Smith, a sports columnist from the Florida Times Union. We're talking Florida-Georgia football. The game is on Saturday at 3:30. How big is this game? Well, if you've never been here, it has its own Hall of Fame. How is that possible? It's only once a year. How does the Florida-Georgia football game have its own Hall of Fame? And
well,
what's the deal with that?
They started it about 15 years ago. And, bowl games have their own Hall of Fame.
Sure.
So they play the bowl games once a year.
Right.
And they usually – it's a minimum of like two players from each side per year. It's always an equal number. Some years there's one per side. Some years there's two. Some years three. But they always make sure that it's equal.
It's even, sure.
And it can be a coach. It can be an administrator who's that the schools put in the nominations, and I think the city council, the Jacksonville Sports and Entertainment Board, mm-hmm. makes the final decision. This year, they're all four of them going in are defensive players.
I see that. Brad Culpepper and Brandon Spikes, and then Benny Curran and Jarvis Jones.
Yeah, Jarvis Jones, who may have had one of the all-time monster Florida-Georgia games for a defensive player in his senior year. He had like 13 tackles and four sacks and forced a fumble. And Jaguars have a player from Georgia named Aubrey Jones. Mm-hmm. And there are three Jaguar players who play for Georgia and three who play for Florida. We did a story on that today about how divided the locker room is. Mm. And I asked each one of them what their favorite Florida-Georgia memory was. Aubrey Jones was so impressed by that game that Jarvis Jones had, they're not related, mm-hmm. that he named that his favorite Florida-Georgia game, and he was injured and did not play in that game.
Wow.
But he played in three other games, but that was his favorite Florida-Georgia memory.
That's pretty awesome.
Was watching Jarvis. So that game made that kind of impression.
By the way, there's a Hall of Fame induction ceremony that's going on today, yeah. and all kinds of fun stuff like that. Is there an actual hall, and if so, where is it?
Well, it's in the lobby of the Memorial Coliseum.
Okay.
And so there's plaques or a list yeah. of them there. You know, of course, it's a virtual online.
Sure.
So they get a little bit of a plaque and everything. But as far as a separate structure, that doesn't exist. But there is a presence. The Florida Georgia Hall of Fame and then the Gator Bowl Hall of Fame is in the lobby of the Coliseum.
Awesome. Gary Smith, sports columnist here at the Florida Times Union in Jacksonville. I have to put you on the spot, just like I have everybody else. What happens tomorrow?
I think one thing that's working in Florida's favor is that they get their two defensive ends back, Jabari Zuniga
sure.
and Jonathan Greenard, who have been hurt. And the last two games that Georgia's won, Jake Fromm has been sacked one time.
Right.
He has hardly gotten his uniform dirty. And they've both been pretty one-sided games, and he's had pretty good games in both those. So For Florida to have a chance in this game, they've got to get a pass rush. The good news is they're leading the SEC in sacks. Mm. They're also leading the SEC in interceptions. So I think Florida makes Jake Fromm a little bit more uncomfortable than he has been in this game in the past. He hasn't played his best so far this season. It's not that he's playing worse than he is first 2 years, mm-hmm. but he hasn't kind of put the exclamation point right. to his career. And there was some talk about Jake Fromm leaving after the season and going into the draft. At this point, I don't know if he's ready for that. Mm-hmm. He's had some mediocre games for him.
Yep.
And I think Florida gets a pass rush on Jake Fromm, and I think they find a way to win this game and break Georgia's streak. And I'm looking at somewhere on the order of maybe 24-20.
Awesome. Gary Smith, sports columnist and sports reporter, longtime sports reporter here at the Florida Times Union. Thanks so much, Gary. You're listening to Florida Georgia Radio.